Blog Talk Radio.
There it goes. Okay, good afternoon. It is Tuesday, November 7th, and this is Mike Vandervoort doing the first episode of Drive Through HR that's been done, I guess, since sometime around Sherm National back in June when I was in New Orleans. And, you know, these are intermittent shows now instead of our former everyday daily podcast. But this week we're going to have a couple episodes. I've got some guests lined up from friends in Philadelphia and friends from the Work Human Conference, which has been going on, put on by Global Force for the last couple of years. And so I'm trying to gather a few of those folks that I was fortunate enough to meet last year at Work Human and talk to them about that and some of the things they have going on in their personal life. And today our guest is Carrie Beauty, who I met at Work Human last year, and she's just launched a new business. Carrie, welcome to Drive Through HR. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. So, you know, right now I'm sure there's no one listening live to this episode. So, you know, this is all for posterity, right? But even though we're doing it live, so before we start jumping into kind of talking about what you're doing, why don't you tell folks who will listen to the show at some point downstream who you are, where you're from, and what you do these days?
I would love to. So, as you said, I'm Carrie Beauty. I have just started my own business. I have been in-house as a talent acquisition, kind of talent management role, and I just launched my company, Mixtape Talent. I guess my title is founder and CEO, and I feel really weird about that. It sounds so official and businessy, but I guess that is what I am. So the way I'm kind of branding Mixtape Talent is as a people operations partner. You know, somebody who can really handle everything from, you know, within a client's talent program. So everything from how they hire to how the candidates are onboarded, what the career paths look like, how they are trained and developed, you know, what their experience is like within the company, what that culture is like, and then kind of how they spread that message as they go out into the world, you know, since they are representing their employer. So that's kind of the world that I'm focused on right now. And I'm really excited about it. So I'm, you know, brand new to being an entrepreneur, but love the HR, people operations, talent world that we live in.
Cool. I want to talk to you a little bit about the new business and that in a few minutes. But so one thing I'm really curious. Well, two things. One is Mixtape Talent. I love that name, and I'm not. It just seems. It's got a ring to it. When I read it, I was like, clever. But I can't say why, right? So why did you pick that particular branding or that name for your company? Does it have a significance?
Yeah, it kind of does. You know, it's kind of like naming a child. You know, it's got to be something that speaks to you. You don't want it to be something that you've heard 1,000 times. You don't want it to be boring, but it can't be too wacky because that might, you know, make you look like you don't know what you're talking about. So, you know, you go through a lot of things, and then, of course, 90% of the things that you like, and, you know, as you sit down to brainstorm, somebody else has already gotten there first. So I actually sat down and I made a list and I said, okay, what are all the things that I like? What are all the things that I, you know, maybe I'm personally drawn towards or I get excited about or maybe just kind of have some of my personality into it. And I'm really into music. You know, I grew up in the age of the mixtape and it just kind of came to me. And the more I kind of thought about it, it seemed like the right name for me. One, because it is a little bit creative. It's a little bit different. It's not corporate. And the clients I primarily work with in the talent base is predominantly based within creative fields. So agencies, startup, you know, smaller to mid-sized businesses. But it's really kind of a more creative, informal client base that I work with. So I thought that might be something that they would, you know, they would respond to. But also when I think about a mixtape, and I still love to make those. It's actually still a hobby of mine, but I do on Spotify now. I thought, you know, a good mixtape has a little bit of everything. So it's got a little bit of, you know, things that, you know, maybe make you, you know, remind you of other things or inspire you or make you feel really happy and energetic. And the more I kind of thought about that, I thought those are all kind of elements that a good company has and a good culture has. You want it to be a little bit of eclectic. You want it to be, you know, a little bit surprising. You want it to be different and have its own voice. So the more I kind of thought about mixtape and mixtape talent, I just thought it kind of fit for the kind of work that I do. Plus, okay. It's fun.
Cool. Yeah. And you have a cool pink logo on your website. I guess I don't know if it's a logo. You have a pink mixtape icon on
yeah.
there that I.
It's a pink mixtape icon. Actually, right now I'm working with my designer and he is getting me the final files today for my logo. And I am super excited. I have a great designer and I was really inspired by book art and album art from the 70s. So I wanted something that kind of had that feel and worked with my friend John Barthmas, and he presented me with 16 options and all of them were great. So I finally narrowed it down and the new logo will be on the site probably within the next 24 hours and I will have business cards in time for my Disrupt HR Philly event next week.
Right, which we'll also talk about in a little bit. So your background. I'm sorry. Before I jump into that, my other question was, and we actually talked about this a little bit in our pre-show warm-up that lasted for 3 minutes because we know that because of the countdown that we get. You chose the term people operate. I mean, it's mixtape talent, but you called it people operations instead of human resources or human capital. Mm-hmm. And I know you said you didn't like have a full, you know, full. That wasn't necessarily an intentional definition, but that you felt it fit. Can you just kind of talk about why people operations partner versus any of the other kind of many choices you had?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, my background is as a writer. I started my career out as a copywriter, advertising, branding. So that's really where my professional base is. So as I think about, you know, branding myself, I'm thinking about not only what are the offerings and what are the things that I can do for my clients and how does that make me different, but I think about the language that I use a lot. And I don't know about you or other people who are listening, but when I think about HR, I'd say it has such a weighty connotation. And I think in a lot of companies, and again, because I work primarily with agencies and creative folks, HR is scary. You know, HR is it's like the police, or those are the, you know, those are the people that sit in the corner and they, you know, they don't want to be bothered, or they're the people that you go to when, you know, you need benefits or there's a payroll problem or, you know, somebody is harassing you or you've got to fire someone. You know, that is in a lot of cases, and I think with a lot of creative people, that's kind of the connotation that HR has. You know, I like to think of what I do as a little more holistic. So I don't do the more traditional HR administrative or the HR generalist things. Those are, you know, far better left to people who are much smarter and much more experienced and educated in those areas. I really like the touchy-feely people part of it. In fact, if I wasn't doing what I'm doing, I'd probably be a therapist. So, you know, I wanted to think about as I brand myself, I don't want to be known as an HR consultant. I like a people operations partner. So that really can speak to, you know, it can speak to the recruiting, the talent placement. It can speak to the training and development, the employee relations, the performance management, internal programs, job descriptions, career paths, how a company messages internally as well as externally about their brand, and just kind of an overall culture. So I like people operations. I feel it's, you know, it's a little bit softer. It's a little bit, you know, feels a little fresher to me and, you know, speaks to the industry that I work with.
Yeah, there's a lot of us, and you know, I'm not truly an HR practitioner anymore, I guess, because I've been running a nonprofit that I'm the executive director of for 3 years, but I still feel, you know, in the HR ranks. I was a practitioner for over 30 years, and I know there's a lot of us that work really hard not to be the scary HR person,
yeah.
you know, in the corner. But I guess the part that resonates with me is, you know, no matter how hard you try, to your point, if that's the customer's perspective, you know, it's hard to serve them. And so I think good companies work really hard to have a different kind of HR presence, but it's a challenge. And in fact, I just read an article this morning, and I can't remember, it was in Workforce Magazine, I think, and it was about, you know, like, with all the discussion about Harvey Weinstein, I don't want to go down this trail too far because it's like a whole nother week of shows. But with all the stuff that's been going on, yeah, you know, but I mean, like, you know, I think there's been a lot of questions, like where was HR, right? And especially in the Hollywood mm-hmm. side of things, you know. And I guess I was talking to somebody offline that I can't remember who it was, but anyway, this article was like, you know, this is HR's job, not, I mean, this is where you really have to stand up. And I kind of agree with that, but at the same time, to your point, if people don't feel the connection long before something like that comes up, they're not going to go to you, or if they feel like you're just going to stand up for the company. Is that something in the creative end? Is it because people tend to, I mean, I'm not trying to stereotype, I guess, but it is creatives often have like a different outlook than a line worker or a retail worker or, you know, somebody that works in a cubicle, because they work independently a lot. They're a lot more free thinking in my limited experience. Do you think that's part of the reason that they perceive HR that way? Or is it because of HR doesn't know how to interact with that type of individual?
I think a lot of times it's not that the HR practitioner doesn't know how to interact with the individual. It's that maybe they haven't been given that opportunity within their role in the company.
Mm-hmm.
I think as much of an advocate as we can be, you know, call it people operations, call it HR, call it talent, whatever you want to call it, as much as we like to be the catalyst of change within a company, you know, I think we can all agree that if we don't have the buy-in from, you know, the people at the top, we're not gonna make those strides that we want to make. So I think a lot of folks who are maybe more traditional HR folks, who are maybe more in an HR generalist role, have those skills, have those, you know, the coaching, the ability to connect with the employees and with the team, but perhaps in their role, that's not something that's been, been an opportunity for them to do that. So I think as long as the majority of the companies have built the HR department as, you know, more transactional, or more the people who, you know, you're the one who comes in when we've got to put somebody on a PIP, or, you know, we've got a harassment issue, or we've got to terminate an employee. If that's when the HR or people operations folks are finally face to face with the employees, of course they're going to have a reputation as not being someone who you go to when you just want to bounce an idea off of them. Or, you know, what if you've got a challenge and you don't want to go to your manager, but it's not, you know, you don't want to make a report, you don't want to start an issue, but you just say, you know, I'm having trouble communicating with my manager. There's so many HR folks out there who are well suited to have those conversations, but if their job has not been structured that way, they're not getting to do it. So they, you know, they get stuck in the corner, and then they get to come out when it's time to terminate someone, which that's not always great.
Right. I worked in I took a job in Florida about 15 years ago, and I worked for a company that was, you know, based in Florida, small employer, only about 150 employees, and the U.S. management team that led HR was based in Palo Alto, so they were like. And I kind of bring this up because I think the opposite side of the coin of what you just mentioned is, like, it also depends, you know, it's HR is sometimes not offered the opportunity, but sometimes it's the top end of the company, or the very philosophy of the way the company operates that kind of limits HR. So when I was operating under the Palo Alto umbrella, it was like, you want to do beer after work? Cool. You want to buy a pool table? Cool. We got sold. And the new company management was, the U.S. base was in New Jersey, and the European-owned headquarters was in Zurich or Geneva, in Switzerland. And the new culture that was overlaid, you know, for us to operate under was very Swiss, right? And they were like, pool table? What's the ROI on a pool table? You know?
What do you need a pool table for? This is an office.
Yeah, we honestly didn't, you know, but it was we were trying to create a certain mentality in a certain environment,
sure.
And it was a research. Yeah, anyway, so you know, the ideas that I had that one company loved, the other one was like, you know, how are we ever going to work with this guy? So I think that, you know, sometimes you can't control it, I guess, is the thought I'm having. So you live in Philly. Are you a Philly native, or did you wander to Philly? Tell us how you got there.
I wandered to Philly. I meandered here about 18 years ago. I'm actually from the South. So I've lived in just about every southern state, but went to high school and my first part of college in North Carolina. So it's probably just easier to say I am a North Carolinian. I transferred up to FIT and went to school, finished up in New York. Got married, had my first daughter there, lived in New York for about 7 years, and then moved to Philly, and I've been here for, 18 years now. That's crazy. It's the longest I've ever lived anywhere in my life. So, yeah, so I feel like a Philly native at this point, and the city has just changed so much in these last 18 years. You know, it's a really exciting place, a fantastic community of people. You know, both in the creative community as well as in, you know, our awesome HR community. And, you know, I know you're going to be talking to a few other folks this week that I love very much, and I'm excited to hear what they have to say. But, Philly's where it's at right now.
It's interesting to me because I work with, you know, I don't have clients per se, but we have members in my organization. I work with companies all across the U.S., and it seems like, you know, at times certain cities just seem to suddenly have there's a lot of focus there. And I don't know, maybe it's just cause I'm paying attention cause I'm talking to you guys this week, but Philly has a feel like that to me. I mean, I know a number of people, you know, besides those folks that we mutually know that we're talking to or that I'm talking to this week, I know quite a number of other people in Philadelphia, and there's a lot of really interesting stuff going on and you know, follow a lot of them on Twitter and social media and, you know, the Wharton School and there seems to be like a ton of conferences and a lot of activity. And I don't spend much time in Philly. I did some work there years ago, but I don't spend a lot of time there. So is there some reason that accounts for that? Is it the diversity of the economy, or do you have any idea why that feels that way right now? Because I'm sure there are plenty of other cities like that, but that one I noticed as I was talking to you guys over the last year or so.
Yeah. You know, I can't really say for sure why we're having our moment right now. You know, not only is there a lot of stuff going on professionally, the Philadelphia Eagles are number one in the league right
sure.
now. So it is our time. It is really Philadelphia.
That never hurts. My lousy Falcons that were in the Super Bowl last year, now they're 4-4 here in Georgia, and everybody's like, what's happening? We're going to die. So
yeah,
anyway.
I guess everybody gets a turn eventually, and this year it finally gets to be our turn, at least for now, knock on wood. You know, but to your point, there's a lot of stuff happening in Philly. You know, we've got a lot of great SHRM events happening. I have a friend, actually, that I met at WorkHuman as well. She was, she's from the South. She was up here. There was a Out and Equal conference back in October, I believe. She was up here, on behalf of her company. She works in the HR people operations field as well. We just had the Philadelphia Conference for Women not too long ago. Michelle Obama mm-hmm. was the keynote speaker. So just a lot of thought leaders, like you said, Wharton's here. We have Adam Grant, who we got to hear worked in 2017 in Phoenix. And, he does a lot of things locally he's involved with. So it's a great educational hub. So many universities and colleges here. So many great businesses. We're seeing an influx of startups. We're seeing an influx of tech companies. In fact, we're one of the allegedly we're one of the primary contenders for the new Amazon headquarters. So, you know, if that happens, my goodness, everything will really change. But just a lot of smart, passionate, dedicated people, just as they are, in cities all across the country. But it's exciting to be a part of the Philly community to see. The energy and enthusiasm that all of these really smart people are bringing, and then getting to know them, getting to hear what they have to say, and then hopefully, in my own way, being a catalyst for that change as well.
Yeah, and so of course we're 20 minutes in. So I'm just going to do a quick, just to let people know who they're listening to in case they jump in somehow in the middle of a show here live, which probably not is, would be random. Our guest is Carrie Bucci. Carrie is an HR. Well, actually, I'll give you the full blown. She's the founder and CEO of Mixtape Talent, which has been a new business for her. She started it up this year and just in the last few months, actually. So kind of on a new adventure. We've got I wanted to talk about a bunch of stuff, but since we wandered into Philly and why it's a vibrant community, you are one of the, I guess, several you have a couple partners that kind of run Disrupt with you, right? I guess I didn't pick that up. So, but anyway, you are one of the people that has been behind putting on Disrupt HR Philadelphia, which is Disrupt is kind of all over the world right now, and I guess is owned. I'm not always clear on my extended relations with the people I know, but Jennifer McClure, I know, is the person that operates the Disrupt HR brand, and she's in Cincinnati, Ohio. And I've been friends with Jennifer, known her for a long time, since the early days of being on social media. Even remember her back in the days when she was Cincy Recruiter on Twitter before you realized that should actually put your
Ooh.
real name up there. And I've done a couple of disrupts. I've done Dallas and I've done Cleveland and I've done a couple others. How did you decide to become affiliated with that? And let's talk about what's going on next week in Philadelphia, as long as we're talking about the scene right now in HR. So tell us about Disrupt HR Philadelphia.
Yeah, definitely. So, back in, I believe it was May 2016 when we had our first event. So it would have been probably February 2016. A good friend of mine, Kelly Polson, who I've known for years, she works in the same space. She's actually just gone out on her own as well as a coach. She had been following Disrupt, knew about it, and wanted to bring it to Philly. So she approached me and a couple of other folks. She approached our friend Michael Harden, who is one of the owners of Juno Search Partners. They're a staffing firm here in Philadelphia. Approached Kim Hughes, who does talent acquisition. She's in Philly. I think she just relocated to Ohio. I don't want to give the wrong city, but yeah, she moved to Ohio. And myself. So we were the four that launched Disrupt HR Philly. We had our first event. We were just kind of flying by the seat of our pants back in 2016, and we sold it out, which was awesome. It was people here, and I think people everywhere, we're hungry for knowledge, we're hungry for community and for connection, but there are only so many conferences, so many lectures, so many networking events that you can go to where you kind of leave and you're like, that was really nice, and I had a couple drinks, or the crew today was tasty, but it kind of felt like the thing I went to a couple of weeks ago or the thing that I'm going to next month. And it was so awesome to hear the response from our first Disrupt HR Philly. We were hearing things like, this is exciting. It's like nothing we've seen before. People learned new things. And the format is really, it's a 5-minute presentation. We have 10 presenters, 20 slides, 15 seconds, and then the presenters just go for it. So it's short and sweet. I think the beauty of it is if you don't really respond to something that one speaker is talking about, it's totally fine because in 5 minutes there's going to be a new speaker with a brand new topic. So it moves quickly. It hits a lot of important points. It can be provocative. I mean, since we've been doing it, we do it twice a year. We're having our fourth event, like you said, next week, November 15th at World Cafe Live here in Philly. We've had some people say, "Wow, that speaker really said something and it made me angry," or "I totally disagree with what they said." And when I hear that people are getting, a little riled up, I think that's awesome. I don't know about you, but I don't want to go and listen to people talk and present, and I don't want to just hear the same thing over and over again. And I don't want to just be surrounded by a mirror of myself everywhere I go. I like being around and a part of a community where people are challenging me and challenging the things that I believe and you know, maybe presenting a new way to look at things, especially in, you know, in a professional lens, I think that's really cool. So I am a huge fan of Disrupt HR because that is exactly what it's designed to do. Every speaker, you know, out of the 10 that you're going to see in each of the events, they are not all 10 are going to speak to you. Some of them might be a little, you know, not your cup of tea. Some people may be presenting on topics that, you know, you're not really excited about or don't speak to you, and I think that's great. I like that there's a forum for all of us to get together, present our ideas, throw some things out there, even if they may be a bit wacky, and give us a space to be able to talk, you know, and have a conversation about
it. And having done those 5-minute things, it's it goes by very fast, but it's a lot of work to put together a meaningful sort of point. It's just one point, a meaningful message in 5 minutes, you know, that especially that lives up to the title Disrupt HR. Now, I did it in Cleveland and they had like, I don't know, three. I mean, I looked out and I was like, oh my God, this is a building, you know, and but they had like 300 people. I guess you get 250 or so, right?
Yeah, we get around 250. We cap it around 250, 275. We routinely sell out, which is a very good feeling to know that, you know, there's a team of us, and we've added a fifth member this year, Tori Mitchell, who also works at Juno Search Partners. So there's a team of five of us now, and it feels really good to know that, you know, we have this audience of people who even, you know, we're doing it twice a year. I have to say, I did kind of worry that, are we doing it too much? Are we saturating it? And the feedback we get has been, we want more, which I'm like, how do we do this 4 times a year? That's crazy. So, you know, right now, twice a year seems great. And the fact that we're able to sell it out, we have this awesome venue that we work with, World Cafe Live, that's mostly for bands, musicians. It's a really wonderful space that's affiliated with WXPN, which is a great radio station. So, again, you know, going back to the point where this is a non-traditional HR-type event, we're doing it in a non-traditional HR venue. So we're not doing, you know, a ballroom at the Hilton. We're not doing it in, you know, kind of an open meeting space. We're doing it in a place where, you know, national musicians usually come in and play shows. We've got a great bar, great food. And so it feels really, really special. But the fact that we've got these, you know, these sellout crowds that come back twice a year, again, because, you know, the content is going to be so different. What we did in the spring is all the topics, the speakers are totally different this time around. So
what do you guys do to promote it to get 250? Just out of curiosity, I mean, do you partner with anybody? Do you promote it through SHRM? I don't want you to give away your whole marketing playbook, but did you do anything unique, or is it just kind of word of mouth, grassroots stuff?
I'd say the biggest draw for us is grassroots word of mouth. Again, you know, the Philly community here is, we're tight knit, we're strong, and the word gets out. You know, sometimes that's a great thing, and sometimes it's not so great thing. And in this case, as we're trying to promote an event, it's a great thing. You know what it's like when you, it's sometimes like you live in a small town, because everybody knows everybody, and like I said, can be great, and it can also be a challenge, but promoting an event, it's a super good thing. We have a social media presence, primarily we're messaging through Facebook and Twitter. We have, because Michael is one of the owners of Juno Search Partners, she has a wonderful client list. So she's able to connect with her clients who are a huge part of our audience. Most of our audience are, you know, HR, internal HR practitioners. We have a lot of recruiters who come. We have, some CEOs and executives from companies who just are really invested and interested in how to enhance their company culture, how to enhance their branding and employee experience. So it's a variety of folks that we have attending, but I would say between the five of us that are, you know, the chief disruptors here in Philadelphia for this event, our network allows us to be able to communicate directly with so many people. And the good news is because it's a different program each time, you know, if you come once and you've had a great experience, we're seeing a huge return rate on those people as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Which is interesting to me because, like I had a train of thought here and I lost it. So that train's off the track. Let me come back to what I was going to ask you. The marketing thing is can be tough. I've having done a two or three different disrupts. That's what I was going to say. When I first started doing them, it seemed like a lot of the people who were running them were, the staffing agencies and it's kind of like the same coalition of partners that you mentioned. But what I've found is that they've really done a good job of reaching out and bringing in practitioner audiences and doing practitioner presentations. It's not all just 5 minutes of marketing about my great software product or anything like that. It's really people presenting ideas. And I think there have been a few movements like that. And I want to kind of switch over. I'm going to traipse through a couple of this week, I forget if it was year seven, anniversary seven or eight, but some friends of mine, Trish McFarland, Steve Bose, Ben Eubanks, and Matt Stolick, who live all over the country from New Jersey all the way out to down to Huntsville, Alabama, founded something called HR Evolution. And that was an early social media conference that was just a get together on a Saturday in a city and just sit down and do, kind of like unplanned sessions. And there were tracks that ran and we hung out and we drank beer and we had a party and made a lot of friends. And those
sounds fun.
it is. It's kind of an unconference type of environment. And many relationships that I have today, were formed through those associations or, kind of early on in the embryonic days of social media, if you will. And I think that has kind of come and gone. I mean, they're planning on doing another one, but it's harder and harder to kind of repeat. But the thing, like something like Disrupt sort of does that in a different way. And I find some of the same things happening, see some of the same things coming out of that you're talking about that we saw out of HR Evolution. And that also is a big how I met you, how we met each other was at like a gigantic event, but an event that and I'm going to disclose I will be at Workhuman. I'm attending as their guest. I'm not compensated other than getting comped into the conference. So this isn't really a paid commercial for Globalforce. I went last year, and it was the first time in a number of years. And this sounds egotistical, but I speak a lot at different conferences and stuff, or I do social media, so I get invites to come and kind of help support them. And I paid money to get into Workhuman last year because I had gone the year before as someone's guest. I didn't get to attend the whole thing. I kind of liked what I saw, but I didn't really get to experience it because I had my own conference coming up like 5 days after that one. And I had other, sort of other business on my mind at that point. Going last year to Phoenix, I met you. I hung out with Robin Schooling, who I've known for a long time, John Baldino, who I've known not well, but for quite a while, and Talia and a few other people. And it was really cool. We sort of had this group of people that bonded, and we spent a lot of time talking at the conference and running into each other. And I think those conversations for me have continued. And that's the first time in a while, for me anyway, that I had made those kind of connections at a conference where they just felt like, you met some new people, you met a new circle. And that was what brought me really into the whole HR conference space in the first place. So you had some interesting stories, I think, that were some interesting experiences that came out of your time spent at Workhuman as well. You want to share some of that with us and how it relates to where you are with your business today?
Yeah, absolutely. So I will say that Workhuman was the first HR conference that I had ever been to. I haven't really typically thought of myself as a conference person. It's not that I shied away from them. It's just I wasn't really focused on them. And I feel like going to Workhuman has really changed my perspective on that, and primarily because of the connections that I made. Like you said, we met there. It was so awesome to meet you, to kind of hear your story and what you're doing and how you're applying, all of these concepts to your work. I met so many other great people there that I wouldn't have ever come into contact with from all around the country. So it's just this really cool group of people who geek out about the same things that we geek out about. I think that's maybe the easiest way to articulate why I was so excited to get there. It did not feel stuffy. It didn't feel boring at all. I loved that there were different tracks that you could attend. So, you know, if you were more interested in, you know, performance management or internal recognition programs, there's kind of a track that you can go for where the topics and the speakers are going to be geared a little bit more towards those topics. You know, I loved kind of the holistic, you know, bringing your whole self to work type of programming. That really spoke to me. But you can, you know, you can bounce from one talk to another. You know, you can decide, I'm not going to go to any of them, but I'm going to, you know, I found my tribe and I'm going to sit here and connect with these five people, you know, outside in this space. And we're going to, you know, we're going to have our own little kind of round table. That was so great. The keynote speakers were amazing. Julia Louis-Dreyfus has always been a hero of mine. Seinfeld is pretty much the gold standard in television, as far as I'm concerned. So it was awesome to get to hear her speak. Of course, Michelle Obama, you know, I don't even have to say anything else about that. That was just such a gift to be able to hear what she had to say. You know, Adam Grant. I loved Susan Cain. She wrote this book, Quiet, and it's about how introverts are leaders and kind of changing the face of how we do business and, you know, breaking the stereotype of the traditional leader as being this big extroverted, loud, big personality, and you know, how we can find space to honor introverts within, you know, within our companies, within our society. I'm actually an introvert. Most people are kind of surprised to hear that. So her work really speaks to me as well. So it was just so awesome to be able to hear what they had to say. But my big takeaway was probably what inspired me to decide to go out on my own in the first place. You know, just the conversations I had, the presentations I attended, it was all content and concepts and energy that I wanted to do something with. And, you know, there may not have been the space in the full-time role in-house that I was in to be able to apply all those concepts. So I left feeling really energized, really inspired, really connected to a larger community of people. And actually, one of the first things I did when I started Mixtape Talent, you know, I did the whole LLC thing, which made me feel very official. Actually, even before I put up my website, I bought my ticket to WorkHuman 2018 in Austin. Mm-hmm. So I've registered and I have my hotel room and it's happening. It was like the first real business expense I invested in, and you know, I can't wait. I'm really excited for the next one to come around.
Yeah, they have some, you know, and I don't actually have the, like, Steve Pemberton, who's does diversity and inclusion at Walgreens, and they're going to have I never know how to say her name. Brené Brown?
Oh, Brené Brown. Oh, she's one of my
favorites. Brené Brown. Yeah, they're going to have her, and they have I guess what I would say about WorkHuman, you know, and this is interesting. Since I've been to a lot of conferences, and I plan conferences is a big part of my job, and you know, and some of them have to be more formal. But I think that Global Force and the WorkHuman event itself, I think they really found a dynamic. It's a user conference. I mean, they're trying to sell their product, but you can't tell that when you're in attendance because they are sharing tons of thought leadership perspectives. I mean, some come from their internal people, many come from external people, you know, some with big names, others just done on like little round table stages out in the lobby where you're doing sort of the unconferencey thing, the 5-minute disrupt type speeches. So they present a wide variety of content, and to the point you made a few minutes ago, Carrie, you can sort of consume it at the level that you want it at. If you want it, it's weird how it can be a big giant event with I think over 1,000 people last year, and yet it could also be sort of like a pretty for lack of a better word, intimate kind of small event if you want to manage your schedule and kind of arrange your you know, how you, the people you hang out with and stuff there. So I just found it to be totally refreshing, and actually, you know, have tried to steal some of the ideas that they had, and reached out to Adam Grant to see if I could get him to speak at our conference. But I found out he has a much higher fee than I have budget. So that's one big difference.
Okay, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, their budget is bigger than mine, and that's cool. But no, so if you have not been to a Work Human conference and you know, you listen to the show, I'll put up a link for the registration, but it's just workhuman.com. It's a pretty complete conference. It includes all your meals and some great entertainment, all that kind of stuff that HR people like to do after hours, but also some really tremendous content for like 2 or 3 days. And I think it's in Austin, right? This go round, is that where we're headed?
Yeah, and like you said, Brené Brown is the keynote speaker, and her work has been tremendously inspiring to me. She does a lot of work, particularly around the concept of vulnerability, and that's something that, as somebody who's launching a business, boy, am I being vulnerable right now. So her work, she's done a ton of TED Talks. She has a lot of very great books. Daring Greatly is one that I'm reading now. She has a brand new one that just came out not too long ago as well. But she really is inspiring, and a normal, real, down-to-earth person, which I would say, if I think about all the presenters I saw at last year's Work Human, they all, you know, none of them seemed overly rehearsed. None of them seemed slick. Like you said, I didn't feel like I was being sold anything, even though it is clearly a user conference. Everyone just seems like these people who are passionate and have wonderful experiences to share with all of us. And it's fantastic.
Yeah, I really enjoyed, and it's, I liked Seinfeld a lot, but I really enjoyed Julia Louis-Dreyfus because I felt like she was talking about some pretty heartfelt, authentic stuff. And in Orlando the year before, I was only there, like I said, for part of it, but I saw Michael J. Fox, and you know, of course he's got his whole story, but I mean, he was cursing, and you know, I mean, here he is in front of it in 900 people, and he's like, well, shit.
Yeah. It feels real.
And I know he's an actor, but it seemed real, you know, and he was very self-deprecating and very charming. And I just found that event is different than a lot of others. So if you haven't ever checked it out, workhuman.com. And if you're not there, but you want to follow along when the thing happens, and the hashtag is #workhuman. So that's it's a great event, and check it out. We're down. I told you these things go by pretty fast, Carrie. We have about 17 minutes left. I don't necessarily want to use that whole time. So I got to get into this a little bit. I met you. We didn't really talk except, you know, for like as you do on social media, but you sort of stay connected to people. And I noticed on Facebook and Instagram and some other places that you, at some point, you know, a few months ago, you were all of a sudden all over the place. You were clearly not in Philadelphia. You were in Asbury Park. So you were near the ocean, which made me jealous. And then you were getting some tattoo work done, which you were sharing, that I thought was lovely. And then you went to Sedona, and then I was like, all right, I don't really know what's up with, and then Mixtape Talent came out, and I went, aha, Eureka, I figured it out, because I'm able to be, but you kind of did a little voyage of self-discovery as you transitioned out of your old role and before you launched Mixtape, right? So you want to talk to us a little bit about that and share some of what you did and what you learned, if that's not too personal?
Oh, no, that's not too personal at all. The last year of my life has been a little bit bonkers. A lot of stuff is happening personally. I went through a divorce. I became an empty nester. I bought a house on my own. And I found myself, you know, at 43 kind of looking at my life and saying, like, oh, well, this isn't what I thought it would look like. You know, I think a lot of us do that at different stages in our lives. And I guess it was my turn this last year to go through that. I loved my job. I had a wonderful job in-house at an advertising agency. I'd been there for almost 4 years, hired over half the agency, got to do a lot of things that I was so proud of and work with some really great people. But I was reaching the point in my career with about 23 years experience where I knew I wanted to do something on my own. I knew I wanted to be the boss, but I was really scared, you know, for a lot of reasons. A lot of it was financial. You know, you get it's really wonderful knowing that you're going to get a paycheck every 2 weeks and that, you know, you have affordable health insurance and that you can take a paid vacation and, you know, you have those resources and that support system. So the idea of going out on my own was really kind of overwhelming and scary. But again, going back to, you know, the great community here in Philly, I have a lot of folks in my network who are entrepreneurs, who have gone out on their own, who have taken the risk, that encouraged me and supported me. And it just kind of felt like the right time. So I decided to take the plunge. My in-house role was kind of changing. The company was changing. We had a change in ownership, so the direction that HR talent was going in wasn't necessarily aligned with my goals. And I'm like, okay, the universe is giving me all of these signs that, like, if I, you know, now's the time to do it. But again, I was pretty scared. So I closed my eyes and I did it. I decided to take a month off. I called it my sabbatical because I thought that sounded pretty official and, you know, pretty cool. So I took my daughter to school. She's a sophomore down at Savannah College of Art and Design. Drove her down there. I came back. I took, what did I do? Can't remember the order I did it in. I think I went to Asbury Park, got one tattoo. I love it there, so I spent some time at the beach there. Decided to book a trip to Sedona, so it was the first time I'd ever really traveled, like a big trip by myself. Flew out to Sedona, spent a week there climbing rocks and, you know, exploring the vortexes. I'm really into all of that, you know, new age touchy-feely stuff, crystals and energy and, you know, manifestations and all of that. And I really used that time to, you know, to sit with myself, to sit with the things that worried me and scared me and allowed myself to be vulnerable. And it was amazing. After giving myself the space to do that, I came back and I'm like, all right, let's do this. I was ready to do it. And I came back and I said, all right, I'm taking the plunge, and then started the wheels in motion to get the business started. So, you know, that was everything from getting an LLC to a website to working with a designer to come up with the logo to figuring out how am I going to market myself, what's my message going to be, you know, all of that stuff. And I'm in that process still now. The business development process is happening, and I'm hitting it pretty hard right now, and I'm really enjoying it. But that, you know, having the space, and I also realize how fortunate I am to be able to take a month off, to be able to have this community of people that encouraged me and supported me and who are my cheerleaders, and when I feel frustrated, who are there to, you know, give me words of wisdom or encouragement or wine. Or sometimes all of those things at one time. But it was really awesome to be able to have the space to clear my head, to take a beat, you know, kind of leave one life behind and start a new life as an entrepreneur and somebody who's going to be, you know, partnering and connecting with, you know, with companies to make their employee experience as great as it can be.
Sedona is, I haven't been there in a few years, but Sedona is, you know, I mean, it's, I don't know, it's magical. I mean, I know that's the whole,
magical,
you know, the whole,
yeah,
whole marketing shtick and the vortexes and everything. But I was there a few years ago and went over a New Year's Eve weekend, holiday weekend. And my wife had gone off to do some touchy-feely new age thing at a therapist. I don't remember what it was. I think she was getting tapping therapy. Tapping?
Yeah.
Getting that done. Regardless, I had an hour and a half or so to kill where I wasn't going to see anybody to realign my chakras or any of that kind of stuff. But I went to one of the vortex areas, and it had been warm. It had been 70-ish the day before, but it was kind of cool on the day that I was doing this, and it was a Sunday morning. And so I drove up to this vortex area, and there was literally nobody there but me. And it wasn't one of the ones that you have to hike 10 miles up into the mountains to get to. It was kind of one right on the edge of town. And I went up in there and I sat down and I was doing meditation, and it actually started to snow. And while I sat there, while I sat there in like 20, and this was big, white, puffy, you know, snow like you would get in Philly, right? Not that you would necessarily expect in the desert in Sedona. And it took those red rocks and it turned it completely white. And there was nobody there but me. And there were no tracks because I sat there and got, it was like an inch that fell. And it did, I mean, I didn't get any other, you know, mystical communications or anything, but it was one of the most serene hours I've ever had, you know, kind of in that moment. And then I, you know, I got up and I left and left, you know, just like tracks out, no tracks in, which I thought was kind of cool. And then the snow melted like 2 hours later. And I have never forgotten that, you know, hour in Sedona, that it didn't transform my life, but it was just like one of those times where you just, you know, you feel like so in touch with stuff that, and it all happened by accident, you know? So
That's awesome.
that's my Sedona story, one
I
of them
like
anyway.
your magical Sedona experience.
It was.
It's such a special place, and yeah, I would say mine was pretty transformative. Mine was pretty life-changing. I came back feeling confident and calm. Like I'm like, who is this person? I was hiking twice a day. I'm climbing rocks, and I'm like, you know, when I'm in Philly, I am not that person. Although since I've come back, I've really kind of gotten into hiking. But you know, I do a lot of mindfulness. In fact, mindfulness has probably kept me sane the last couple of years. So you know, I'm a big advocate for mindfulness and meditation. But one of my favorite quotes in the world is by Amy Poehler, who is just, I think she's a genius. She's hilarious. I love everything Amy Poehler does, but one of my favorite quotes that she says is "the doing is the thing," and actually that's the background on my LinkedIn page right now. She, you know, I think the quote is "the doing is the thing, the talking and the worrying and the thinking is not the thing," and I really kind of sat with that as I was meditating the last few months. And yeah, I think it's easy to talk about, you know, it'd be great to start my own business or even to talk about, you know, how many things are wrong with your current job or your current situation, whether it's personal or professional, or, you know, worrying about why I shouldn't start my own business or worrying about, you know, what does it mean if I fail, and overthinking. And yeah, I didn't want that to be the thing. I wanted to be a doer and not a worrier and not somebody who just sits around talking about it all the time. I wanted to be the person who actually did it. And so being able to, you know, to clear my head and take the time in Sedona and at the beach and with my friends and, you know, honestly, just having the luxury to lay on my couch in the middle of the day and watch television, which was like pretty, that was like Christmas and Hanukkah all rolled into one for me. You know, it cleared the space for me to be able to, you know, to really live into the doing is the thing. So here I am. I'm doing it. I have to believe it's going to be successful. I am still, you know, it's scary. It's scary, and I'm vulnerable, and I've also never been more excited about, you know, where my career is going. So it's all good.
Well, that's very cool. So I always do this. I don't always do this, but you have a lot of tattoos, which isn't a judgment comment. I mean, you had a lot when I met you, and you've added some. And I always and especially since I know you're a storyteller at heart, you know, I don't think you can tell us about every one of them, but you know, like I have one, and I'd like to get another one of these days. But I put so much thought into thinking what it should be, I can't figure out what I want, which means I'm overthinking it probably. But like, what's the background story on a couple of yours? Are they art? Do they speak to you about a part of your life? I guess I'm just always curious about the motivation, about showing your story on your sleeve, really, is how I view it.
I think that's a great way to look at it. Every tattoo I have, and I have a lot, I think that's another thing that kind of, I don't look like your average HR gal. I have a full sleeve on my left arm. I have a partial sleeve on my right arm. You know, I've got some on my legs, on my back, on my hips. There's a lot going on. I'm kind of running out of real estate. But But everyone, you know, even if there is not a literal meaning, you know, I'll be honest, I have some that I just think are pretty. You know, I like the design, I like the colors, I like the, you know, the subject matter. You know, I have crystals on my right forearm. I have a vintage tarot card on my left forearm. It's the High Priestess, which speaks to intuition, which is something that you know, I would say my intuition is something that I've really gotten in tune with, and when I listen to it, I am never disappointed, and when I go against it, I'm always regretful. So I love the meaning of the High Priestess because it really speaks to intuition and your inner wisdom and how we know so much more than we give ourselves credit for sometimes. We just have to kind of listen to that small, still voice inside of us. And then one of my most recent tattoos that you probably saw on Instagram came out of, and, you know, it was when I had decided I was going to start Mixtape Talent. It was during my month-long sabbatical, and it is inspired by RuPaul, who I just think is an angel here on earth. And RuPaul has this quote and says at the end of every show, if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love someone else?
Right.
And, boy, I really love that because, you know, first of all, at the end, they say that, and then everybody, they said, let the music play, and everyone dances around, and it's like a dance party, and what could be more fun than a dance party? But, you know, that, it's really, it speaks to me, and I think it's so true. If you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love someone else? So I got a heart on my left forearm. And it's, you know, it looks a little glittery. It's very girly. I love color, big, bold color. And, you know, a traditional tattoo might say, you know, mom or, you know, your significant other's name. And my banner, the name on my heart says myself. So I have embraced loving myself, which means, you know, I will be able to love someone else. And, yeah, it's also, I think it just looks pretty.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. That's why I said when my question, you have a lot of tattoos, as if that, you know, some people would say it that way. You have a lot of tattoos. anyway, it's all nuance of voice, I guess. Listen, yeah. I really appreciate you being on the show. I really enjoyed meeting you. I'm sure I've said that like 10 times. And you know, it was so fun at Work Human with you and all the other people that I guess this week partly was inspired just by the fact that another one's coming up, and I sort of wanted to start to try to reestablish the tribe and recreate some of those moments, yeah. You know, in anticipation of more. And when I checked in with you, you know, you had a lot going on, and you had a lot of cool story. And the purpose of this podcast, you know, used to be to talk about HR, and I guess since we don't do it every day now, the purpose is to kind of drop in every now and then and check in with people and see what's up. So I really appreciate you being on Drive Through. I'm really looking forward to seeing you at Work Human, and maybe, you know, never know where else, I guess. And good luck with Mixtape. And if there's anything I can do to help with that, just let me know. Otherwise, why don't you tell people? You're welcome. Why don't you tell people where they can find you on social media, at least on Twitter or Facebook, if you want to share that. And then we'll call it an hour. Because that's about how
I would love it. So you can find out all about Mixtape Talent on my website. That's mixtapetalent.com. On Twitter, I've been around there for a while. I'm at Cupcakey, CUPCAKIE. So I'm starting to get a little more active on Twitter there. I will see you at Work Human. I'd love to see you in Philly. So Michael, come and visit us. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, that could happen. I was up there late in 2016, but it was before I met all you guys. So I'll make a point of that. Carrie, thanks so much for being on. I'm going to end the show. As I said, I'll send you the link. It'll be up posted on Facebook and Twitter for other folks who want to listen in. And if you're listening to the show, you know, after we recorded it, thanks for being on the scary female voice of Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for listening to Drive Through HR. And this is Mike Vandervoort. And our guest is Carrie Bucci. And we're going to say goodbye and have a good afternoon. Thanks, Carrie.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.